Good afternoon. Thanks for joining Parsha Perspectives on Parshas Beshalach. I'd like to speak this afternoon about the concept of bitachon, a Jew's bitachon in Hashem. Specifically, to have bitachon in Hashem's promises to us individually, Hashem's promises to us nationally. Parshas Beshalach opens up with a very peculiar description of Yetzias Mitzrayim. The fact that Yetzias Mitzrayim, Hashem was not able to take us directly straight out of Mitzrayim, but rather He had to take us on a circuitous route around and about, instead of taking us straight into Eretz Yisrael. Why? The Torah says, "Lo nacham elokim derech eretz plishtim." Hashem didn't want to take us the direct route through next to the plishtim, because Hashem said, "Kemay elokim paninachem ha'am b'rosam l'chama." Maybe they'll encounter a war with Plishtim, and they'll be scared. They'll run back to Mitzrayim. So therefore, Hashem took us in the roundabout way, the circuitous route. V'chamushim alu b'nei Yisrael me Mitzrayim. Now, that description of our leaving Mitzrayim is punctuated by a side point, as if the Torah says, "Time out, time out. I want you to know there was very important cargo that was being carried when b'nei Yisrael left Mitzrayim." So as I'm telling you about the route, as I'm telling you how B'nai Yisrael left Mitzrayim, you should know that there was a really important suitcase that was going alongside Klal Yisrael. And that is, Vayikach Moshe, Atzmos Yosef, the next pasuk says. Moshe carried the bones of Yosef, because Yosef had made his brothers promise him, Pakod Yifkod Elokim Aschem, Hashem is going to remember you one day, and you should take my bones out and bury them in Eretz Yisrael. And then the next pasuk goes back to the main point, that Hashem leads them through the desert, Bamud Eish Yomam, with a pillar of cloud during the daytime, Bamud Anan, Bamud Eish La'ir Lahem, at night Hashem takes a pillar of fire to guide them, which is also describing the travels of B'nai Yisrael through the Midbar. But the question is, why this tangent in the middle of describing Yetzias Mitzrayim to talk about the fact that, and by the way, there was one really important suitcase, a very important suitcase. There was the coffin of Yosef that was accompanying them. Why this punctuated description of this this very important suitcase? Why do we need to know that? And why break the flow of the description of the point of Yetzias Mitzrayim? That's the first question. The second question, it says in the pasuk that I shared with you, V'chamushim alu b'nei Yisrael me'eretz Mitzrayim. B'nei Yisrael left Mitzrayim chamushim. What does chamushim mean? So Rashi quotes a medrash that chamushim means one out of five, that only one-fifth of the Jews left Mitzrayim, four-fifths perished in Makas Choshech, and really there were millions of Jews who didn't ever experience Yetzias Mitzrayim. Only the 600,000 that left were only one-fifth of the 2.5 million that were, 3 million Jews who could have left, but their others died. They didn't have emuna in Yetzias Mitzrayim, but Rashi says that's not the primary definition of the word chamushim. Rashi says the main pshat of the word chamushim is mizuyanim, armed. That means B'nai Yisrael, when we left Mitzrayim, we were armed. We had bows and arrows, we had chariots, we had swords. Which makes the pasuk very peculiar, because that means that the pasuk says that Hashem took us out in the indirect way, because we were scared, Hashem was scared that we'd get frightened if we faced war, and we'd turn away in the face of the Plishtim to run back home, and we were walking out with arms. That doesn't flow. It should be just the opposite. This shouldn't be just the opposite. Since we had arms, and we were armed, that's the reason why we shouldn't be scared. And the same pasuk that says that Hashem took us out on this circuitous route specifically says that they were armed. Hashem took us all around the long way, and we walked out armed. Chamushim alu b'nei Yisrael, that we walked out with arms. It seems to be almost contradictory. If you have arms, that's a reason that we should be straight and we shouldn't be scared of going through the straight, direct route, because we shouldn't be scared of our enemies. Yet the Torah seems to say that we were armed and Hashem still was scared that we would, you know, be terribly frightened if we would face battle. This oxymoron, if you could say, is pointed out by the Sfarno. The Sfarno says that really, you would think that Klal Yisrael had arms with them, v'chamushim alu b'nei Yisrael, that's the reason that they shouldn't be scared. Says the Sfarno, af al pi shahayu mizuyanim, even though, despite the fact that they were armed, nevertheless, im kol klei zayna, with all of their arms, with all of their military strength, that the Jews did have, as the Pasuk testifies, lo haya lahem ometz lev, they didn't have the courage to fight against Mitzrayim if they would meet battle. What an incredible point. The Sfarno is teaching us that after all Hashem had done to them, Makas Dam, Tzvardeya, Kinem, Hashem showed them how he made the whole world turn upside down, topsy-turvy, Makas Bechoros. Even with that, and they're walking out with guns and cannons, and still they didn't trust in Hashem. What a contrast that the Pasuk is trying to teach us. The Pasuk is saying, says the Sfarno, that even though they were armed, Hashem still had to take them in a circuitous route because they didn't trust in Him. You know what it's like? It's like a chassan at his wedding, he writes the ksuva. And the ksuva says that I promise I'm going to take care of my new wife, I'm going to take care of her for all of eternity, even after the marriage is over, whether by death or divorce, whatever it is, I'm going to take care of my wife. My estate will take care of my wife. After the wedding, he sees his kala wrapping up some, asking the caterer for some tinfoil, wrapping up the leftovers from the wedding. And he says to her, sweetheart, what are you doing? She says, I don't know where I'm going to have lunch for tomorrow. I want to take some leftovers. I don't know where my lunch tomorrow is going to come from. She doesn't trust him. It's a slap in the face. I just signed a ksuva that says I'm going to take care of you forevermore and I'm going to provide your food and your everything you need. And here, you don't trust me that I'm going to feed you lunch tomorrow? That's what we did to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He just finished doing the Aseres HaMakas. He just did Makas Bechoros. The next day we walk out with guns in our hands, with swords and rifles, swords and bows and arrows in our hands. And Hashem has to take us the circuitous route because we don't, we're going to be terrified if we would meet any battle. Says of Nevinsal from the old city of Yerushalayim, this could explain what that pasuk in the middle, that pasuk about Atzmos Yosef, about Yosef's coffin accompanying them in their trip. This could explain what that pasuk is doing there, why it punctuates the description of Yitzias Mitzrayim. Here's Yosef, and he had a complete trust that 150 years after he dies, Hashem will take Bnei Yisrael out of Mitzrayim like He promised. And Hashem will take Bnei Yisrael to Eretz Yisrael like He promised. And Yosef trusts in the fact that his great-great-grandchildren will take his bones as they promised, as his brothers had promised him. And contrast to that, Bnei Yisrael, who after they experience the incredible Gilui Shechina of all the Aseres Makos, don't trust in Hashem. That's what the Pasuk is trying to show, that contrast of Yosef, who had the trust in Hashem and in Bnei Yisrael, compared to the Bnei Yisrael themselves, who didn't have the right trust in Hashem. And with that, says Rav Nevinsal, we could appreciate two very essential words in that Pasuk. Because when the Pasuk describes Yosef's trust in being taken, his body, his bones being taken from Mitzrayim up to Eretz Yisrael, he says, Pakod Yifkod Elohim Eschem, V'halisim Asatz Masai. He made his brothers promise with those two words, Pakod Yifkod. I have faith that Hashem will remember to take us out. Those two words were code words. Pakod Yifkod. Those were the same words that Hashem used as the code word, as a password, to convince Bnei Yisrael that the moment of Geula has arrived. Because earlier in the Torah, Hashem says to Bnei Yisrael, to Moshe and Aaron, go gather the Zakenim and tell them, Hashem came to me, and Hashem wants to save you from Mitzrayim. Lemor pakod pakadeti eschem. The time has come for me to remember and to save you. And therefore Yosef is using those, the Tosfos is using, those same words that Hashem said to save Bnei Yisrael, you could trust in me. And Yosef says, I trust in Hashem. And we see, despite that, the Pasuk highlights the contrast that Bnei Yisrael didn't have their trust in Hashem. They were 600,000 strong, with arms, and they didn't have trust in Hashem. They lacked bitachon. And Yosef, as the Pasuk indicates, had so much bitachon in them, as demonstrated both by what he told his children, what he expected, and the very same words that were used to describe the trust we should have had in Hashem, that Hashem would save us. That's the first hef. That's the first thought that I'd like to share with you today about B'nai Yisrael's lack of bitachon. I'd like to share with you another thought in the second half of today's presentation that talks about the bitachon that a Jew can and should have. And after I share that, I want to share with you an incredible story that happened this week that will illustrate the point that we'll make. We know that this week's parsha, Parshas B'Shalach, was Shabbos Shira. Shabbos Shira, the kids come home from school with bird feeder projects. And the minhag is that there's a tradition, a very old tradition, hundreds of years old, that we put out bread for the birds on Shabbos Shira. But the later commentators on the Shulchan Aruch say, you know what, it's not a good minhag. It's not a good minhag because the halacha is that you're only supposed to feed animals that you are responsible for, domestic animals. Animals that are mizono san alecha, that their responsibility for feeding is your responsibility. But not for animals out in the wild, you know, wild birds. Animals she'en mizono san alecha. What's the problem? The problem is it's called in halacha a tircha shelo letzarech, an unnecessary toil. Chazal didn't want us to, have to work unnecessary. So something's your responsibility, your cat, your bird. We have a cockatiel in our house, we have a bird in our house. So it's my responsibility to take care of my family, my animals, my birds. But animals out in the wild, it's not my responsibility. Chazal don't want me to be toreach, to toil, shelo letzarech, for no need on Shabbos. And therefore many later mefarshim on the Shulchan Aruch said, this minhag should be abandoned. Don't continue this minhag. However, others argue and say, the Aruch HaShulchan says, what do you mean? How could you abandon a minhag of Klal Yisrael? We have a tradition, minhag Yisrael Torah. Our minhagim come from pure sources, come from very valid reasons our minhagim begin. And therefore the Aruch HaShulchan says, what's the reason that we give crumbs to the birds? You think we're worried about the birds outside? We don't do it for the birds outside flying around, migrating north or south. We do it for ourselves. Because the birds, there's a tradition that Chazal said that the birds also sang Shira after Kriyas Yamsuf in Parshas B'Shalach. And therefore, when we reward the birds, we compensate the birds, we remember for their Shira, we are reminding ourselves. And therefore, we're doing it ultimately for ourselves, not for these wild birds. We're doing it for ourselves to remember Kriyas Yamsuf, to remember the Simcha of Shiras Hayam. That's one explanation. Others explain, a sefer called the Eish Lavram, he says, no, you see, the reason why you're allowed to give the crumbs to the birds is because what happens after Shabbos meal? After Shabbos meal, somebody, maybe it's you, maybe it's your husband, your wife, your son, your daughter, somebody is going to take their hands or a knife or a napkin and, gather the crumbs together into one, the middle of the table. Then they'll put their other hand underneath the table or a plate or a bowl or the garbage can, and they'll brush off the crumbs onto their hands or onto the napkin or onto a plate or something. And they'll take it and they'll throw it out in the garbage. Says the Eish Lavram, well, on Shabbos Shira, you have to do the same thing, but instead of throwing it into the garbage, just throw it onto the windowsill or onto the front porch. You were worried, what's the whole problem that the later Achronim raised that there's a problem with feeding the birds, that it's an unnecessary tircha, a toil shelo letzorech? There's no additional toil. You're doing it anyway. Just instead of throwing it in the garbage, throw it onto the windowsill or onto the porch. And therefore, he says it is a proper minhag that you should do because it doesn't involve anything like a tircha, like an unnecessary toil. Okay, so we have a discussion as far as whether how to do this minhag or not to do this minhag, or is it an appropriate minhag. But I want to go back hundreds of years and understand what's the source for this minhag, a Shabbos Shira, of feeding crumbs to the birds on this Shabbos. Three suggestions. I'll focus on the third. One is that which we just saw. The Aruch HaShulchan said that there's a tradition that the birds also sang at Kriyas Yamsuf. Okay. I'm not sure why, because they sang at Kriyas Yamsuf, I should throw crumbs to them, but okay. Another suggestion that is suggested among the many explanations is unrelated to the Kriyas Yamsuf and unrelated to Az Yashir, but it has to do with something at the end of the parasha of Man. The mitzvah of Man had a number of mitzvahs that Moshe instructed Klal Yisrael. One of them is that the Man will not fall on Shabbos. And therefore, of course, we'll get a double portion of Man on Friday. That's why you have Lechem Mishnah on Shabbos. Because Kedusha Shabbos, there will not be Man falling on Shabbos. But the Torah tells us that there were two bad guys, Dasan and Aviram, wanted to plot together to disprove Moshe, and they scattered Man all around the camp in the middle of the night to try to cause questioning in the minds and the eyes of Klal Yisrael, that they could, Bnei Yisrael, wake up Shabbos morning, let's say, oh, there is Man. Nevertheless, the birds came in the middle of the night, that late Friday night or early Shabbos morning, before the Jews woke up and had a chance to see what Dasan and Aviram had scattered. And they ate up that Man that Dasan and Aviram had scattered. And therefore the birds upheld Kedushas Shabbos, and we reward them on Parashas B'Shalach, on the Parashah of the Man, by scattering food for them. It's a beautiful idea. What I would like to focus on is yet a third explanation of where this minhag comes from, to scatter crumbs to birds on Shabbos, or Parashas B'Shalach. And this is from the Tamei Minhagim, who quotes a beautiful Chasam Sofer. The Torah tells us on Parashas B'Shalach and the Parashas Haman that Hashem instructs Moshe. Moshe, therefore, consequently tells Aaron, I want you to fill a jar. Meloha Omer Mimeno. Take a jar and fill it with one day's portion, an omer worth of man. Put it in a jar, seal the jar, limishmeres ledorosichem, for an eternal archive. Put it in the archives, put it in the Beis HaMikdash, put it in the Mishkan, and keep it in the Jewish National Archives, l'man, so that yiru es halechem asher ha'achalti eschem b'midbar. So for all generations, they'll be able to see the bread that I gave you. We had guests this Shabbos. Guests who are on their way to discover Judaism. They weren't fortunate enough to learn about Parashas B'Shalach and Man when they were in elementary school. They went to public school. And one of the questions that was asked at the Shabbos table is, one of these young men said, Rabbi, what did the Man look like? And you know what I wish? I wish I could have taken out this jug from the Beis HaMikdash, this jar, and say, here, this is what it looked like. You want to know how it looked like? You want to know what it was? It's hard to imagine that we got Man from the heavens. This is it. This is what it looked like. Now, it's especially unusual about this, the fact that we should put it in our eternal heritage, our national archives, so that this Man should last forever, is because every other Man, all the other Man, had a very short shelf life. The shelf life of Man, as the Torah itself says, was one day. The Torah says that whatever would be left to the next morning, Vayorum tolaim vayivash, would become infested with worms and would be spoiled the next morning. Why did Hashem want to preserve the Man? Rashi, on this week's Parsha, tells us, why is it that you have to have this portion that's stored l'dor ha'sechem? Because in the time of Yirmiyahu, says Rashi, Yirmiyahu is going to chastise Klal Yisrael and ask them, Lama ein atem oskim b'Torah? Why aren't you learning Torah, dedicating yourselves to Torah as you should? Why aren't you putting the hours into learning Torah as you should? And Klal Yisrael, in the time of Yom Yom, respond to the Navi and say, Naniach melachtenu v'nasok b'Torah, we should leave our jobs and learn Torah. Meheichan isparnes, from where we'll be able to get a parnasa? How will we be able to afford tuitions? How will we be able to afford our rent? Things are so expensive. So Klal Yisrael will ask Yirmiyahu HaNavi. Klal Yisrael will ask Yirmiyahu HaNavi, how are we going to be able to afford? How will we be able to afford all the things that we need? What do you mean we should start learning Torah? We should rededicate ourselves to Torah. How will we live if we don't work as much as we could and should? Yirmiyahu lifts up for them the Tzinsenes Haman. Va'amar lahem, and Yirmiyahu says to them, Bazen it parnesu avoseichem, with this jug of man, your forefathers in the midbar were sustained. Harbe shluchim yesh lo lamakom, Hashem has many ways to take care of his children. Don't you worry. You do what Hashem wants you to do. Hashem has many ways to take care of yourself, to take care of you. And that was the goal of the man. The point of the man was that it was a lesson for us. Although the man was only in the Midbar, the lesson of the man was to be preserved forever. That even when we wonder where our food is going to come from, where our panas is going to come from, Hashem will take care of us. And Hashem does take care of us. Says the Chasam Sofer, Klal Yisrael in Tanakh are likened to one animal. Which animal are we likened to? The Pasuk in Shashirim says, Yonasi, Hashem calls us Yonasi, my dove, my bird, b'chagvei ha-sela. Hashem compares us to his dove, his bird. And therefore, says the Chasam Sofer, as we read the Parsha of Man, we throw a little bit of food to the birds to demonstrate that if Klal Yisrael, the Jewish people, are compared to those birds, dedicate ourselves to Torah, dedicate ourselves to serving Hashem with a full heart, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will shower us with all the man that we need, with all the sustenance that we need, with all the mezonos that we need, with all the crumbs that we need. And that man will come from Shemaya. We don't have to know where it's going to come from. HaKadosh Baruch Hu will take care of Klal Yisrael if we dedicate ourselves to Him. I want to finish with a story that no one heard because it just happened last week. It happened to somebody in our community, and the person to whom it happened was shaking as he told me the story the day it happened to him on Wednesday or Thursday this past week. Somebody from our neighborhood got a Yerusha a number of years ago from his father's business, and part of that was the building that his father had a business. It was a big warehouse in a certain part of New York City. And it was an old dilapidated building, but it was very large. And it happened to be that over the past few years, it was in an area of New York City that became a very hot residential area in real estate. And it was an area that was very much a depressed area that all of a sudden was becoming the place to be for all the young, cool people to move and buy luxury condominiums. And here he had this gigantic warehouse, which wasn't so, valuable. But now that the real estate had gone crazy in this neighborhood, he saw it was time to sell. And they had to piece together a very, very complicated real estate deal because it was a deal that involved numerous properties, because the goal was going to be that you're going to take a few properties together and build a gigantic luxury condominium tower for residences. And this was going to be the main part of that deal, this because it was a large property. They were going to knock down the warehouse. Developers would buy the property, knock down the warehouse, and build this luxury tower. And it was a very complicated situation because of the size, the zoning regulations that had to be adjusted because of the changing from a warehouse, commercial zoning, to a residence, and because there were multiple properties involved. Finally, there was somebody who was going to buy it. A developer was going to buy it, and the deal was in the works. And knowing that this deal was in the works was just a matter of a few weeks or months, and he knew that the sale was coming through, this gentleman in our community decided that because he knows that he's coming, going to have this profit coming in, this windfall coming in, he took upon himself to send a whole bunch of young men to yeshiva, boys who otherwise wouldn't be able to afford to go to yeshiva. He sent them to Eretz Yisrael, paid for their tuition, paid for their flight to Eretz Yisrael. And that was what he was going to commit himself to, tens of thousands of dollars, because he knew he was going to have this money coming in a little bit later. This past December, about 5 weeks ago, after a year and a half, after the deal was shut and closed and perfect and everything happened, the deal collapsed 5 weeks ago. It just fell apart. Partially because of COVID and the buyer and the developer, the cash flow, whatever it was, the deal collapsed. After it was 100% going to go through, everything was right, everything the way it was supposed to go. 5 weeks ago, gone. Meanwhile, he had spent a huge amount of money to send these boys to yeshiva. This past Monday, a week ago from yesterday, this fellow in our neighborhood gets a call from Jonathan, his broker. And his broker said, this past week, those of you who are read the business news know, there was a certain stock that went crazy last week. It's called GameStop. If you've been reading the news, you know it was the focus of the business news for the past week and a half. and it was a stock that was at $7 just a few months ago, and it had jumped to $146, 2,000% jump, because of some complicated thing in the stock market. This one stock went absolutely crazy. And the stockbroker called him, and Jonathan called him and said, you know, I'm looking through my, after this craziness with GameStop, I decided to look through my clients' portfolios to see who has GameStop in their portfolio. And I found that you have GameStop in your portfolio, so I wanted to tell you, you know, it was at $7, and now it's at $146. Sell. So the fellow in our community says, Jonathan, there's no way I have any GameStop. It's a video game company. First of all, I'm not a big buyer of stocks. Second of all, any stocks that I buy are only food stocks. You know, people are always going to eat. I'm a conservative person. I only buy stocks like food because people always need to eat. I don't know anything about tech. I don't know anything about video games. I'm certainly not going to buy a stock in a video game company. Do you have any record of me buying this stock with you? Jonathan says, to be honest, we don't have any records of you buying the stock, but I'm just looking at your portfolio. It's there. I don't understand where this is coming from. I don't know. Okay. Well, how many stocks are there? How many shares are there? Okay. So Jonathan tells him how many shares he has. And the fellow says, okay, so sell whatever, 20%, 30% of the shares, and we'll leave the rest to see, maybe the stock will climb. Okay. So the broker sells whatever they agreed upon, 20, 30% of the share. So meanwhile, the two of them, this person in our community and the broker, this happened last week, are looking at the news. Tuesday, Wednesday, the stock jumps to $360. That's a 5,000% increase. Again, a few months ago it was $7. Now the stock is 300 and it reached 360, a high of 360. When it was about 340, I don't remember who called who, if this fellow called Jonathan, Jonathan called him and said, you got to sell. It's at $340, $50, $60. You have to sell. This is the greatest thing that could ever happen to a stock, beyond any imagination of what could happen to a stock. And he says, okay, how many are left? Let's sell just about, you know, 90% of the remaining shares. Leave 10% just in case, you know, the stock, you know, skyrockets and hits it goes to 1,000. Just leave a little bit, sell the rest, sell 90%, and that will be it. Jonathan says, okay, I'll sell right now to take advantage of this incredible high, and sells the stock almost at the highest point that the stock had reached. It was within a few dollars at around $340 a share, making a 5,000% return on whatever the investment was. And the fellow says, Jonathan, you'll send me he tells the stockbroker, you'll sell me a confirmation of what the proceeds from the sale from Monday or from today's sale was, and include your commission. Send me a confirmation of what all the proceeds from the transactions were, including your commission. You'll send it to me, you'll email me. Sure, I'll email it to you. So, fellow that evening, or gets back from work, whatever it is, checks his email, and there's the confirmation, the proceeds from Monday's sale, the proceeds from the next sale was Tuesday, whatever, I think Wednesday's sale, maybe it was Thursday's sale, I don't remember, and the stock brokerage fee, and looks at the number. And the number was the exact same number of dollars that he had sent, that he had written for the check for a year and a half ago, to send those boys to yeshiva, off by about $170. Tens of thousands of dollars, the exact same amount, off by about $170. HaKadosh Baruch Hu looks after those who do Ratzon Hashem. So next time we see birds eating crumbs on the street, we could think that if Hashem takes care of the birds, if Hashem makes sure that the birds don't go hungry, I'm no less important than a bird. A Jew is no less important than a bird. And a Jew who does Hashem's will, Hashem will certainly throw his crumbs to us as well. That's the lesson of the man. That's the lesson that Yosef knew. That perhaps that was the lesson that Klal Yisrael needed to learn. And maybe that's why after we left Mitzrayim, and we were scared lest we meet battle, even though we were Chamushim, and Hashem had to take us on a circuitous route, Hashem had to teach us the ultimate lesson of trusting in Hashem, the lesson of the man. We shall all be zoche to be botech in Hashem, to realize Hashem's love for us, and Hashem will always be there for us, and Hashem will always provide for us. And Hashem should indeed always do that for us. Thank you everybody for joining us this afternoon. We should have a